It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this, the third day of June, 2021. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room in the hours in which the program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. And once there, you'll be greeted by early arrivers, Roger in Oregon, and Squeaky, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although he is a third stage guild navigator, has not folded space to become Man Cave. And he is capably assisted by longtime pinch hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all around great guy, Steve from Georgistan. Brother Bishop Steve from Georgistan. Hi, I'm Robin. It is Thorn in the Side Thursday, and every program at The Horn begins with gratitude. This program is, of course, no different. And so that means we send out thanks on this third day of the month to our third day of the month subscribers. And that would be thank you very kindly to our pal Mick and John. Thank you to Gene and Ann across the pond. Thank you to Bill in Allentown. Thank you to Stephen. And thank you as well to people who jumped in to help out with the fundraising deficit as it exists. Namely, thank you, Jessica. And thank you very kindly to an anonymous friend who actually met Paul from Parts Unknown's Summer of Robin Challenge. In the afterwards of yesterday's program, thank you so very much indeed. And so, like I said, this Thorn in the Side Thursday finds us with a $540 fundraising goal, and that helps immensely. It will help immensely going into Friday on the front porch if it's not an $840 community made miracle goal. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just going forward, we'll do what we can, do the best that we can. And a couple of great notes to begin the program. You go, girls. Joey writes, before we start this Thorn in the Side Thursday, I think it's only appropriate to begin by discussing two of the coolest gifts I've received from members of the Horn community, and those were the aforementioned shining rocks that Jude sent to Mike Malloy for all of us at his retreat in 2018. I still have my shining green rock from the Malloy Fest, as I mentioned last week, and also I still have a gift that Scotty gave me when Rick and I met him in San Diego. Scotty mentioned last night it has been 3 years since Punky passed in 2018. And he misses him. I miss hearing Punky tweet in the background while speaking with the artist formerly known as Bob. However, Scotty gave me three of Punky's feathers on September 10th, 2019, and I cherish them because I love animals and I love Scotty. Thank you, Scotty. And I'm sorry Punky isn't still here to chirp. Apparently, I am blipping all over the place, so let me pause the program and see if I can address that issue. Stand by. Well, the internet blipping is not coming from my end, so it's probably the fabulous, fabulous infrastructure of Shentel Communications. Jeffrey chirps in on the conversation. Oh, Robin, did you criticize Rafael Nadal last night for his criticism of Naomi Osaka? Well, that's right, Rafael. Go play with your Saudi princes, and maybe today Mohammed bin Bonesaw will buy you a 24-karat gold tennis racket that you can shove up your pompous, egomaniacal ass on your 35th birthday, which is today. Saudi women are just now being allowed to drive a car, and now Nadal wants to tell Osaka what to do. Naomi Osaka has earned the right to talk to whomever she wishes, and she does not need you, Nadal, to treat her as if she's in a cradle and to dictate to her about speaking to the press. She's 23 years old, and she can afford to pay a $15,000 fine by not speaking to the press. More power to her. Personally, especially where tennis is concerned, I believe talking to the press is just a big ratings racket. As you stated last night, Robin, the press just presses pro athletes just to get a scoop and make a name for themselves. The press has ruined a lot of athletes' lives, and the paparazzi probably killed Lady Diana. Well, good job. Good job, Jeffrey. We spoke of Jack Kevorkian yesterday and how on June 1st, 2007, he was released from jail. Well, on this day, June 3rd, 2011, Jack Kevorkian died. Hopefully, Jack Kevorkian went out on his own terms. Jeffrey has a little more to add. On this day in 2009, New Hampshire passed gay marriage, which followed the first state to pass gay marriage, Massachusetts, back in 2003. And the next year, San Francisco began marrying same-sex couples in an open challenge to California state law. And as the legend goes, Matt in San Francisco, along with his husband, was the first to be married by Arnold Schwarzenegger. Yeah, I don't think it quite worked like it. Nothing quite like that there, Jaffrey, but you're romantic, so. I was so proud of Breonna Keeler on CNN the Wednesday morning when she shoved the bullshit of Texas State Senator Brian Hughes right up his ass. Brian Hughes tried to lie to Keeler when he said that the latest bill passed by the Texas Governor Goebbels did not take away souls to the polls voting. Hughes also went on to claim that there were thousands of illegal voters in Texas that voted in the 2020 election. To Breonna Keeler's credit, she immediately nailed this asshole and made it clear that there were actually 43 illegal votes in Texas, and there are over 15 million eligible voters in Texas. Great job, Breonna Keeler. And Jeffrey has a couple more thoughts, of course. He's feeling loquacious today, apparently. This thorn in the side Thursday, assholey in Brian Hughes, was born in Quitman, Texas, not far from Longview. Imagine that, a short-sighted person from near Longview. Hey there, Lion Brian, why don't you just Quitman and go back to where you were born? And a great conversation with Darlene and Tracy last night. I heard Tracy mention the name of Phyllis Schlafly, and I just remember my mother swearing at the television set, just like Darlene does these days, whenever Phyllis Schlafly would show up on the Phil Donahue show. And yes, Tom Hartman is an ass for entertaining Phyllis Schlafly on his show in recent years. Yeah, Phyllis Schlafly, national treasure. Oh, boy, and you can't leave Jeffrey out of this one. Yes, Phyllis Schlafly should have been her name because she did more than any misogynist man alive ever could have to the women's movement. If I ever see that Tom Hartman again as Joey did in Columbus in 2012, I'm going to ask him just what he was thinking when he was speaking to the woman who almost single-handedly brought down the women's movement. My God, Tom Hartman, what were you thinking? Come on, Tom, please, have a heart, man. Oy, oy, oy. Yeah. That reminds me of that loony show in the 70s, Mary Hartman, Mary Hartman. I could just envision Jeffrey chasing down Tom Hartman in that voice from that show yelling, Tom Hartman, what the hell is wrong with you, Tom Hartman? And so this has been Joey's Journal for Thorn in the Side, Thursday, June the 3rd, with Giraffe wondering how to get rid of an unwanted presidency like the one we had in 2016 and potentially in 2024. There's a $30 unwanted presidency challenge on the table, so that would get us down to, if met, that would get us down to $480 in fundraising, and that would be hugely helpful, hugely. So thank you for that. Also, another note, getting us started on this Thorn in the Side Thursday from our pal Jessica. Listening to the podcast, and it never ceases to amaze me the topics that will grab people. I never know. I never, ever know. Listening to the podcast, and the subject has turned to hair loss, a subject I know all too well. Male pattern baldness is endemic on both sides of my family. I began noticing it affecting me in my mid-30s and accepted my fate like a good stoic Scandinavian and the product of multiple generations of Midwestern farm stock. In fact, I embraced it as I lost my hair during my first rigmarole with cancer, and I could have passed as a clone of Sir Patrick Stewart. Delusions of grandeur, maybe. But I was also sleep-deprived from the steroids I was taking to suppress any nausea from chemo, dexamethasone. I'll post pictures on the Facebook page for a visual, so run over there and have a look later. Still, not a bad look for a middle-aged male. But of course, once I did so, our Blessed Lady of Irony intervened, and I realized I was transgender. Oh, shit. Like you, Robin, and a number of other trans women, I am currently taking finasteride and massaging my scalp with minoxidil to try to reverse the effects of dihydrotestosterone. I might even inquire with my surgical team about hair transplants if I feel things are still lacking. Mind you, I have nothing against wearing a wig either, but I want to try and regrow my own first. I understand that. Jessica, you might take note. At least I read something about this along the way. If you're contemplating hair transplants, plugs, as it were, if you also contemplate any facial feminization surgery, you want to have the facial feminization surgery first because that whole process can ruin hair plugs, and you don't want to pay for that twice. I just read that somewhere. So, to John, I want to say that I would have proudly stood with him in the Slick Top Club, John in Central PA, the Brotherhood of the Bald, or whatever euphemism you care to use. And to you, Robin, I caught your little side comment when mentioning minoxidil doesn't regrow receding hairlines, and you were growing something else. Something? Singular? They usually come in pairs, and I'm not going to say what, because I don't want to set the boys off again, and I still haven't found the fucking saltpeter. So here's $2 for the giggle. And actually, what the hell, let me give you another giggle at the expense of my own pair. Not getting called out for being fake, but just the opposite. Them's fake, babes! Which, by the way, I'll note, I got a message from Todd. That's all it said. Them's fake, babes! I visited the old hometown the other morning, says Jessica, to help my parents with a few things, and I stopped by the coffee shop where I spent countless hours trying to solve the world's problems with other local characters and where I'm well acquainted with the owners. I was slumming that morning and decided to eschew the requisite undergarment for the girls, as given their modest profile, they're barely noticeable, especially with a plaid shirt and jean jacket over my t-shirt. I was wearing a tank top underneath, but that wasn't enough to conceal a minor embarrassment. I was showing off the t-shirt to the young woman who's part of the establishment, proudly displaying the custom graphic my wife Susan had applied, which is the sign of the female circle with the cross underneath with a pair of devil horns at the top. I saw that. That's cute. And as my friend informed me in a text afterwards, the side effects from the cool air conditioning, yeah. I keep forgetting my little pinheads have become pencil erasers. Needless to say, I'll be more diligent about adequate coverage in the future. And even though this isn't the forum section that was featured in a certain gentleman's magazine, if the hound dogs in the audience appreciated this little anecdote, they can kindly tip their friendly radio hostess for providing them such quality broadcasting is this. Signed, Jessica. Oh, my God. Well, I can see where the program's going already, and we're only a quarter of the way into it. Daggone it. Thank you for that, Jessica. Oh, my God. The things we talk about. We got to be, yeah. And I'm learning the joys of down there hair removal, and oh God, never mind. Note coming from Ron and Raleigh. Just when you thought... Ron says, it seems that the political establishment in Israel is just as tired of the murderous Bibi Netanyahu and want to show him the exit. At first, I thought, good, we'll be free of this fucker. However, I looked up the guy that'll be replacing Bibi, one Naftali Bennett, who is said to be gasped to the right of Bibi. How is that possible? Get any further to the right of Bibi Netanyahu, and you're going to loop back on yourself and be over... Never mind. No, not quite. This doesn't give me a good feeling about the Palestinians' future, says Ron. The coalition being formed includes an Arab party. The main group in the coalition is the Yesh Atid party, formed by Yair Lapid in 2012. Mr. Lapid is considered a centrist. I don't know what that means in Israel. The two men, Lapid and Bennett, are supposed to switch off every 2 years. Mr. Bennett has already said he's not going to let Mr. Lapid take the seat. Who knows what the Arab coalition members are going to do except sit on their hands? I hear pundits still talking about a two-state solution. This is bullshit. As Israel continues to annex and steal Palestinian land and houses, why do we keep talking about an impossibility? And we've been talking about systemic racism. I'm sure you've heard that a team in the NFL, and I did, and I just, what the actual, have decided to give Tim Tebow, little Timmy Jebo, another chance in the league. Tebow's been given several shots in the NFL, Major League Baseball. Meanwhile, none, not one, of the white team owners will give Colin Kaepernick another shot. Smells like racism to me. Maybe I'm wrong, Ron says. Don't think you are. More Tebowing in our future? Oh, probably, if he gets to start. I can't... Oh, Jesus, please, no. But there we are. Mm-hmm. One wonders which team it will be. Whichever team it is, and please don't let it be the Steelers. Please don't let it be the Packers. Please, please, please don't. Yeah, okay. Because I don't want to hate teams that I love. I mean, it would be handy for me, no offense to the folks in the greater Dallas Cowboys fan area. It would be fine with me if it was the Washington Football Club or the Dallas football team, because I despise them both. And definitely not the Niners. Please not the Niners. I'm sure Sparky's saying this. No, not the Niners. Please not the Niners. No. God, apparently long blips this evening, and I wish there was some damn thing I could do about it, but here in the midst of the program, there really isn't, and it sucketh. I'm not even seeing any buffering here, so I'm hard pressed to figure out exactly what it is that's going on. A little bit of a backtrack, because we had so much political stuff yesterday, we didn't get to any prayer meeting. So let's just check in. Let's check in Missouri, Vernon County, Missouri. The Kansas City Star reporting that two members of the congregation at the Bible Baptist Church have been charged with over 100 counts of abusing girls at their Christian boarding school. In amongst those 100 counts, there's 6 counts of statutory rape for Boyd and Stephanie Householder. Mm-hmm. They were taken down, Boyd and Stephanie Householder, back in March, after former students at the school went on TikTok and talked about what had happened to them at the Christian boarding school. As a result, Boyd Householder is looking at 78 felony counts, including statutory rape, sodomy, and sexual contact with a student. And Stephanie Householder is looking at 21 felony counts for abuse or neglect of a child and endangering the welfare of a child. Missouri Attorney General Schmidt said in March the charging documents allege extensive and horrific sexual, physical, and mental abuse perpetrated by the Householders. My office has worked tirelessly to investigate this case and will continue to work around the clock to ensure that justice is obtained. And it's, I hesitate to share the particulars of what these Christian monsters did. And it went on and on and on, and nothing was done about it until the couple's own daughter, Amanda, and other former students went to TikTok to make the allegations. Their own daughter said it was sad to see that happen to her parents, but they deserve to be arrested, and the arrest should be celebrated because, quote, it's about time, unquote. Now they have pled not guilty, but this is where the good God fearing, upstanding Bible believing, etc. comes in. The pastor of their church, again, Jerry Pyle, who is the gospel sharp at Bible Baptist Church of Vernon County, Missouri, said that Boyd and Stephanie Householder are facing, quote, false demonic accusations. And he is trying to raise money for them on the backs of little raped girls. See, this is another one of those moments where I don't understand why any woman participates in Christianity. I just don't. In the letter written by Jerry Pyle, he said, I cannot begin to tell you how it grieves me to only be able to see and visit with these two faithful Christians once a week, separated by glass while talking on a phone. I know that prayer is where this battle is going to be won. We absolutely need your help in your prayers, but we need your help financially. It was so bad at the preliminary hearing yesterday, or I'm sorry, last week. A couple of weeks ago, rather. It was so bad that a former employee of the Cedar County Sheriff's Department by the name of Ruth Belcher had to request the judge to instruct the householder's attorney to advise them not to mouth the word lying bitch. Meanwhile, states all over the union are worried about people being sexually abused by trans people just trying to go pee-pee. Meanwhile, there's no hue and cry out there for the Boyd and Stephanie householders of the world who ran something called Circle of Hope Girls Ranch. And that's where the abuse happened. So it was already a place, and there are these places exist all over the country. People will set up nonprofits to take in, for money, mind you, children who are coming from quite often horrific situations in the first place, and then turn around and abuse the bejesus out of them. Among other things, Boyd Householder is alleged to have slammed his victims' heads and bodies against walls, slapped them with his hands or a belt, poured hot sauce down someone's throat, pushed a victim's head into horse manure. That right there is the love and grace of the Lord Jesus Christ. I think Boyd was reading it wrong. He didn't say, y'all come on and make them little children suffer. He said, suffer the little children to come unto me. But I wanted to make sure that we didn't miss the story. Because, oh my God. Yeah. So we'll move into some other stuff. Going back to the issue of Tim Tebow running, Raleigh says, how you like the Jaguars? That's who decided to give Timmy another shot. Well, of course, down there in Jesus land, that'll put butts in seats, and that's all that matters. And I don't like the Jaguars, so that makes it a little bit easier, Ron. Thank you. The buffering has apparently let up. That's a little win. Speaking of little wins, a little bit of justice here in the recent past. It was a while back in Minnesota. There was a maggot rally last fall, and Dwayne Waldriff walked up to a photojournalist by the name of Damon Cahoon, who was shooting video of the rally for later broadcast. And Dwayne Waldriff walked right up to him and the protesters. 71 years old, Dwayne Waldriff. And said, you guys want to be peaceful? Be peaceful. You want to be violent? Come to me and I'll... And then he just threw a punch. Yeah. And he has pled guilty to a single count of disorderly conduct because the prosecutor allowed him to plead it down and agreed to dismiss a second charge of fifth-degree assault. He'll pay a $400 fine for punching a member of the Fourth Estate, and the $400 fine will be waived if he writes a letter of apology to the man that he attacked. Man, talk about kid gloves. Well, I mean, he's 71 years old, right? Well, yeah, he was 71 years old, but he felt froggy enough to walk up and punch a man in the face. But, you know, we don't want to upset the maggots too terribly much because they might have a sad. Ugh. Oh, other good news, because it's thorn in the side Thursday, but we'll take whatever good news we can get. Louis DeJoy, the Postmaster General, who should have been, I don't know, should have been priority mailed to Ice Station Zebra or something. Well, according to the Washington Post, Louis DeJoy is now under investigation by the FBI. The FBI have been interviewing current and former employees of DeJoy and his business because he was apparently putting the screws to people who worked for him to make political donations, and you can damned well guess who the beneficiary or what party was the beneficiary of those donations. Last year, in an investigation by the Washington Post, Louis DeJoy, according to people who spoke to the paper, a longtime human resources director at DeJoy's company, David Young, said, Lewis was a national fundraiser for the Republican Party. He asked employees for money. We gave him the money, and then he reciprocated by giving us big bonuses. When we got our bonuses, let's just say they were bigger, they exceeded expectations, and that covered the tax and everything else. Now, a spokescreep for Louis DeJoy said, he believes he's always followed campaign fundraising laws and regulations. Well, you know, that would be one way of getting him to stop ruining the post office, you know, sending him to the Gray Bar Hotel. The sneezer, the cooler, the stir. Yeah. God. We now have a number on the cost of the attack on the Capitol. According to figures released by the Department of Justice, $1,495,326.55 is the amount of damage that the maggots did. And I don't care what Louis Asparagus Gohmert says. It was right-wing insurrectionists, maggots. And in the case of Paul Hodgkins, 38 years old, a crane operator from Tampa who has pleaded guilty to one felony count of obstructing an official proceeding of Congress and will be sentenced on July the 19th. Well, U.S. prosecutors this week, and this from the Post, U.S. prosecutors this week put a price tag for the first time on damage to the U.S. Capitol from the January 6th breach, $1.5 million so far. And they want, in plea deals for people charged in the insurrection, they want some of the damages assessed against the defendants. One defense attorney, speaking anonymously, said several defense, prosecutors with the U.S. Attorney's Office in Washington are seeking to require restitution of $2,000 in each felony case and $500 in each misdemeanor case. I wonder if maybe it'll be forgiven if they write a letter of apology. You know, to Nancy Pelosi. Ain't gonna do it! As the Post pointed out, if they do that with everybody charged so far, and there are still a lot of people who have not been charged, the Post wrote, the government will hardly reap a windfall under this approach, since even if every defendant agreed to terms and pleaded guilty, the total paid would fall well below $1 million. The costs of the Capitol attack go well beyond the $1.5 million estimate cited by prosecutors this week. A $1.9 billion security funding bill passed by the House included $40 million for the architect of the Capitol for direct attack-related costs, part of more than $730 million set aside to reimburse the National Guard and other agencies for expenses in responding to rioting. I'm not so sure about that word, rioting. Responding to the treasonous attacks that led or contributed to 5 deaths, 140 police officers being assaulted, and, of course, the evacuation of a joint session of Congress. Yeah. Meanwhile, you know, some of you have questioned me every time I brought up the ongoing causation argument regarding COVID-19. And I explained at the time exactly why it's important, and here we go. Earlier today, statement by Donald J. Trump, 45th President of the United States of America. Yeah, put it on your blog, dumbass.
Now everyone, even the so-called enemy, are beginning to say that President Trump was right about the China virus coming from the Wuhan lab. The correspondence between Dr. Fauci and China speaks too loudly for anyone to ignore. China should pay $10 trillion to America and the world for the death and destruction they've caused.
Yeah, I don't know about you, but it's in caps, capital T 10, capital T trillion, capital D dollars. And really, I think he should have hired Mike Myers to voice his Dr. Evil character.
$10 trillion.
And, of course, they're catapulting the propaganda, and, we're falling for it, our side. But it's pretty disgusting. And it's been an all-day attack on Dr. Fauci.
After seeing the emails, our country is fortunate. I didn't do what Dr. Fauci wanted me to do. For instance, I closed our borders to China very early, despite his not wanting them closed. That wasn't the point. And no, he didn't close the border. No. Did he say that? I closed our borders to China. We don't have any borders with China, nitwit Nero. And goods continued to flow back and forth, and people continued to come back and forth. And there was never any real closure. The Democrats and the fake news media even called me a xenophobe. I don't know what that means, but they called me one. No, I added that last part. In the end, we saw this was a life-saving decision, and like, yeah.
Well, that's almost 600,000 lives that didn't get saved, almost 600,000 lives that got ended.
I was later given credit even by Tony for saving hundreds of thousands of lives. Dr. Fauci also didn't put an emphasis on speed of vaccine production because he thought it would take 3 or 4, maybe even 5 years to create. I got it done in less than 9 months with Operation Warp Speed. In retrospect, the vaccine is saving the world.
Well, no, it's not. Because the Biden administration announced today even more assistance going to worldwide vaccine distribution. Because the world is still on fire with this goddamn thing.
Then I placed the greatest bet in history. We ordered billions of dollars worth of vaccines before we knew it even worked. Had that not been done, our wonderful vaccines would not have been administered until October of this year. No one would have had the shot that has now saved the world and millions of lives.
God almighty, what an idiot. That's good. Ralph says, Dr. Evil, you said that after I started my email. I love it when great minds think alike. Oh, are we having an art of word-knowing thing? FBI have? I'm finding myself having to dispute your art of word-knowing credentials more and more. It should be FBI has. Did I hear you correctly? Well, the FBI is... It's one of those gray areas, Steve. You can... And it's also one of those things that's kind of a difference between British English versus American English. If you prefer to see the FBI as an it, as a singular thing, it would be the FBI has. But the FBI is made up of hundreds, if not thousands, of individuals and divisions and departments and special agents. And so that would be the FBI have. Potato, potato, tomato, tomato. Let's call the whole thing off. Steve adding... I suspect the reason for Tebow going to Jacksonville is because Urban Meyer, his coach at Florida, is the coach at Jacksonville now. If you already mentioned this, I'm sorry I didn't hear. Well, that would, I mean, there's at least some linkage there. Urban Meyer, I'm done with coaching. How many times has he been done with coaching? And he goes right back to it like a dog returning to its own. Right. We're going to, oh, God, there's just so much today. We've had a, well, it's not really a sighting. It's a non-sighting. You remember Alabama's walking, talking, breathing, derping shame of a member of Congress? He represents North and Northwest Alabama. We're talking about, of course, Mo Brooks, Les Brames. Well, He was one of the key personalities who drove the big lie and drove the furor that led these mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing, teeth-picking with their toenail clippings maggots to attack the Capitol of the United States on January 6th in an act of blatant insurrection. And he knows it. And all of his bravado seems to be dissipating a little bit. Could we, yeah, like smoke in the wind. Yeah, because, see, Eric Swalwell, who is leading a lawsuit against Mo Brooks for starting the insurrection, egging it on, inciting it. Well, Eric Swalwell is having a dickens of a time catching up to Mo Brooks' Les Brames. Now, just a few minutes before the crowd attacked the Capitol Police and the D.C. Metro cops on January 6th, Mo Brooks' Les Brames was barking and hooting and grunting about how today is the day American patriots start taking down names and kicking ass. And he's even used it in Facebook ads. He brags about it, his involvement in the attacks of January 6th. Well, it has come out from the prosecution of the lawsuit against him and Trump and others. Swalwell's lawyers, in a statement to CNN, said, counsel spoke to two different staff members on two separate occasions, and each time was promised a return call that never came. And so Philip Andonian, the lawyer for Eric Swalwell, said the problem here is that Mo Brooks' door is under lock and key. There was just no access to the primary place where he was for much of the day. It just takes persistence and luck sometimes. We're not claiming Brooks is hiding in a bunker somewhere, but it takes a lot of effort. He is hiding. He's doing everything in his power to avoid service of process so that he won't be subpoenaed to testify under oath about his involvement. So, with the subpoena, they'll be able to depose him, you know, once they serve him. And the stories of things that process servers have gone through to serve papers on people are legendary. So who knows what this will come to, but you know, if he was the true patriot that he is, he'd just accept service and show up and take the oath and testify truthfully. But he can't do that because if he no. What it boils down to, Swalwell claims that the four men prompted the attack on Congress. That would be Donald Trump, Mo Brooks, Les Brames, Trader Tot, Donald Jr., and, you know, Rudy Giuliani. They are alleged in the lawsuit to have incited the attack, and that they broke the Anti-Terrorism Act. They violated it, and they aided and abetted the insurrectionists while they were attacking the Capitol, including the fact that they subjected to the members of Congress to emotional distress. Swalwell claims that the four men prompted the attack on Congress with their repeated public assertions of voter fraud, their encouragement that supporters go to Washington on January 6th, and in their speeches that day, each man had told the crowd that Joe Biden's electoral certification in Congress could be blocked and that Trump supporters should fight. Mm-hmm. Well, they'll eventually get Mo Brooks, Les Brames served, and you just got to wonder, I mean... Or do you? I don't know. And what I mean by that, will any of these people be brought to justice? Dare we hope for that? Or will there be some kind of a loophole? Maybe he can. Maybe Mo Brooks can write a letter to Nancy Pelosi and be forgiven. As Brother Deacon Asa pointed out earlier, hell, that maggot that didn't know how to play it right. Forget the $400 fine. He could have become Montana governor if he had the wherewithal to body slam that damn journalist, Greg Gianforte. Anyone? Sure. Oh, God. On and on and on. But there's only one thing to do, and that's root this madness out, this evil. root and branch and all the way to the top and all the way to the bottom. And I think we know what will happen when that takes place. On the other hand, there's a high school teacher in Georgia named Clint Taws. He was a literature teacher at Effingham County High School in Georgia. And he's quit, according to WJCL. He's quit because he was told by the administration of the school that he could not discuss what happened on January 6th in his classroom. Mr. Taws said one student asked, "Why aren't they being arrested, the attackers?" And another student answered and said if they were black, they would have been arrested already. And that's when the principal intervened, when a parent called. And he went to Mr. Taws and said, "Any political discussions need to be avoided." Speaking to WJCL, Mr. Taws said, "She told me it's not a current events class, it's a literature class." And then he also went on to note that the high school's mascot is a rebel and holds a symbol that looks surprisingly like a Confederate flag. In his description, he said, "This whole rebel and Confederate imagery thing is just part of the school culture. This incident made it clear to me that right now Effingham County High School is not a place that values all students equally, so until that changes, it's not a place that I can be part of." And that took courage, because now he has to go and find another job. And in a place like Georgia, he may well be blacklisted out of this because, well, he's failing to bend and kiss the hairy orange toe of Nitwit Nero. Then there's... Memorial Day was this past week, this past Monday. And a 77-year-old retired Lieutenant Colonel Barnard Kempter had been invited to speak as the keynote speaker for the Hudson American Legion Auxiliary in Hudson, Ohio this past Monday. I don't know where Hudson is. I'll bet you Joey and Giraffe do. I bet you Steve does. And so retired Lieutenant Colonel Barnard Kempter sent his prepared remarks to the American Legion Auxiliary because he wanted to focus on the origins of Memorial Day in Charleston, South Carolina. He said, among other things, as he spoke, "The holiday is rooted in a moving ceremony that was conducted by freed slaves on May the 1st, 1865, at the tattered remains of a Confederate prisoner of war camp. The ceremony is believed to have included a parade of as many as 10,000 people, including 3,000 African-American school children singing the Union marching song, John Brown's Body. As they marched, they carried arms full of flowers, and they went to decorate the graves of Union soldiers." And the minute he said that it began as a memorial of the children of freed slaves. Some of those children may have been slaves in their own right at birth, because that's how it worked. Well, when he mentioned it, suddenly his microphone went off. Mm-hmm. He thought they were having technical difficulties, and he kept speaking without amplification. But later on, the Hudson American Legion Auxiliary President, one Cindy Suchan, interviewed by the Akron Beacon Journal, said, "The history of the holiday was not relevant to our program for the day." You know. Too black. And the local American Legion Auxiliary has been roundly criticized. Representative Casey Weinstein is a Democrat and represents Hudson and the surrounding area. And he said, this is an embarrassment. I want to know why the organizers felt they had to censor this veteran at our Hudson Memorial Day event. And may I point out, Colonel Kempter, retired, was in full uniform. All of his ribbons, all of his little doodads in the right place, shoulder boards, hat, the works. And he was photographed tapping on the mic, you know. This thing on. And a 77-year-old white man talking about the origins of Memorial Day was just too much for the delicate, oh-so-fragile, dainty, white ears of Hudson, Ohio. And I am informed by Steve in New York, Hudson is a Chichi suburb near Cleveland, or is it Toledo, though I can't imagine anything being Chichi near Toledo. Well, okay, that kind of explains it, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. It's pathetic. Our country, to say the very least, is not in a good place. Yeah, Steve says, in regard to Mr. Clint Taws down in Georgia, literature is never political. Nah, no, not at all. Mm-mm. And as for achieving service on Mo Brooks, Les Brames, service on the Moster, they'll just end up nailing it on his door. I hope that ends up on the news. Oh, maybe Mo Brooks. Wonder how Mo Brooks would like to have people banging on his door the way that the people that he incited banged on the doors and the walls of Congress on January 6th, right? And I have, from time to time, mentioned the fact that our problem with right-wingers and white supremacists and neo-Nazis and the like, it goes far deeper. Well, let's go to Placer County, California. There's a Facebook page called Placer County for Trump. And they've got a group, and they have organized periodically those obnoxious truck caravans. And they've driven all over the area, the Sierra Nevada foothills, northeast of Sacramento. And they've continued to have maggot to-dos even after the January 6th attack on the Capitol and after the January 20th inauguration of President Biden. There was even a March 21st MAGA wedding. And it was, Trump, maggots and Proud Boys and such were in attendance. And it's got that group. Thank you. Yeah. As to Hudson, Ohio. It's okay, Robin, says Randy in PA. Everything's going to be all white. Yeah. No, they've got 4,600 members in the Placer County for Trump Facebook group. And they had a weekend parade over Memorial Day weekend from Rockland to Sacramento. One of the admins is Chelsea Knight. She's a big flogger for the group. And it turns out that over on Telegram, she pushes Nazi propaganda. Things like the 14 words and 14 things and 88 more. the white supremacist 14 words doggerel. And the 88 is, of course, a special number to Nazis because H is the eighth letter of the alphabet, and Heil and Hitler, and thus 88 is a way of saying that. Jesus. So, in case anybody was wondering, yeah, there are there are Nazis, as if we didn't know, Nazis among the maggots. Because it is a fascist movement. And I mentioned the business with Nitwit Nero yakking on and on about Anthony Fauci. Jesus. All of this comes as the result of a Freedom of Information Act request by, I think, BuzzFeed News for email correspondence related to Dr. Fauci and the origins of how we handled or didn't the pandemic. Enter K. Lie Maganini, who repeatedly lied to the American people as Nitwit Nero's press creep. And, of course, she was brought on to Fox News TV Radio Rwanda to catapult the propaganda. Get the hockey puck.
Maybe some expectation for that? We don't know. We weren't there for that transaction.
And, Emily, there needs to be an investigation into this, hugely, because right after
Hugely. Hugely an investigation. It needs hugely. Hugely modifies needs.
Dr. Fauci stood at that White House podium, lied to the nation, said this originated naturally. Guess what? He gets an email from the nonprofit that gave the money to the Wuhan lab, thanking him for using his respected voice to maybe cover up the fact that it started in a lab.
Interesting use of the word maybe. Maybe's doing a lot of work there. And so this is why it matters. There's still no evidence, as Paul from Parts Unknown told us a couple of days ago, Tuesday. There's no evidence to suggest that it originated in a lab. But because the propaganda is being so thoroughly catapulted, not just by Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, but by everybody who picks this garbage up and puts it forward. Well, that will become the dominant narrative.
They should pay us $10 trillion and I should get some of it.
Nothing in there about the fact that they were briefed in mid-November, the White House and the Pentagon, not Congress, but the White House and the Pentagon, and that they went on and briefed the Israeli government, and it got loose in the Israeli media. Nothing. But that's a hell of a thing to know about it in mid-November. That's mid-November, that's half of November, all of December, all of January. Didn't do anything for most of February. And by then, well, the virus had its running shoes on. And oh, what a horrible, horrible price has been paid. We haven't even necessarily counted all the deaths. It's not unimaginable to think that of the ones we've counted, that the ones that we missed may be double that number. We could be over a million deaths just from ones that we missed early on. But, well, this is going to become the narrative. And it is not going to end well for the United States. No, I don't think so at all. Meanwhile, up over in Oregon, further developments in the case of a member of the state senate of Oregon, Mike Nierman. It was December 21st, 2020, when a whole bunch of right-wing thugs, including members of Patriot Prayer, which is actually a street-fighting gang that has beset the Northwest like a plague of syphilitic locusts, they attacked the Capitol of Oregon. And there is a 7-page report out now written by one Melissa Healy, who's a private attorney. Because of complaints against Senator Mike Nierman, he comes from Polk County, Oregon, and he is an ultra-right-wing maggot. Well, Ms. Healy's report states, the evidence supports a conclusion that it is more likely than not that Representative Nierman intentionally aided demonstrators in breaching Capitol security and entering the building on December 21st, 2020, when it was closed to the public. And there's something. So that's December 21st of 2020. You think maybe that the success of that operation, that attack, might have inspired, because the same sorts of people were involved in the attack of January 6th. And so that's one state senator in Oregon. What about the fact that we have been given information? No one's really named names yet, but we think that there were members of the House and the Senate of the United States who were swanning around the Capitol of the United States with soon-to-be insurrectionists who weren't even supposed to be in the building, because like the Oregon Capitol in December of 2020, the United States Capitol in January of 2020 was closed to the public because of the pandemic. Over at Oregon Public Broadcasting, Dirk Vanderhart reported, as lawmakers met in a special legislative session to take up COVID-19 relief that day, surveillance footage showed Senator Mike Nierman, exiting the locked Capitol building into a throng of protesters who were trying to get inside the State House, and in doing so, he appeared to purposely grant entrance to far-right groups demanding an end to ongoing restrictions related to COVID-19. Shortly after that breach, demonstrators scuffled with state troopers and Salem police. One man is accused of spraying officers with bear spray, allowing the crowd to make its way further into the building. Several people were arrested before the Capitol was cleared, and members of the crowd went on to shatter glass doors and assault journalists outside the building. Damn, sounds familiar, doesn't it? Nierman, meanwhile, promptly walked around the building and entered on the opposite side less than 6 minutes after he exited. And so as of January 12th, 2021, over 24 Democratic state representatives in Oregon have filed a workplace complaint against Mike Nierman. On February 23rd, David Hartsfield, the facility services manager at the Capitol, also filed a complaint against him. What's missing from that? Criminal charges. I'm trying to figure out how that fits within, I presume that Oregon has some version of the speech and debate clause, but I'm trying to figure out how that fits. Because for me, at least, it really doesn't. Mm-mm, no. Well, Maybe we'll get to the bottom of it someday. As to the Nazis, and Stephen New York says, these fuckers are too ignorant to realize that Hitler thought all non-Germanic peoples were inferior to Germanic, especially German-speaking peoples. Well, I mean, he wouldn't have thought that about them, right? Because they're special snowflakes. Jesus. Oh, God, I didn't see that. Jack in Shreveport says, speaking of prayer, did you see that Facebook's going to put in an option for prayer groups? Oh, God. Well, at least I don't have to worry about joining any of them. Oh, my God, says Ralphs. Kali Maganini copies Drumpf hugely. Yeah, I know. Busy evening, and we're hardly started. I wanted to check on something here. We've passed the top of the first hour of the program, and we are still at Goose Egg. And that does make things somewhat difficult. But we'll do the best we can. Looking for it because it is Thursday, and well, it would be a good time to check in with Brad and Desi and the Green News Report. See what they've got for today, shall we?
It's Thursday, June 3, 2021.
A cargo ship that was on fire for weeks off the coast of Sri Lanka is now sinking, sparking fears of major ecological disaster.
Cargo ship carrying acid, oil, and plastic sinks off the coast of Sri Lanka. Man-made global warming to blame for one-third of global heat deaths, study finds. Plus,
President Biden is making good on a climate change promise.
Interior Department suspends oil and gas drilling in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge.
All of those promises kept and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Apparently, when Bernie goes on the road, Senator Sanders staffers put together a list of Bernie's travel preferences. He required his room be kept at 60 degrees. In fact, Bernie was so adamant that the room temperature be low, he would go out of his way to keep it at 60, even if it meant opening a window in winter or manually overriding the hotel's climate control system. That must have been quite a phone call to the front desk.
I believe in climate change, in that we have to change the climate of this room, or else I swear to God I will sleep in the ice machine. I need to wake up feeling like a flounder in a fish market.
This is your Green News Report.
Click!
Okay, Desi Doyen, sorry, long snarky comment. What do you got for us today?
Well, first, a full-fledged environmental disaster is underway in Sri Lanka, where a stricken container ship carrying 25 tons of toxic nitric acid and 350 metric tons of oil has been burning for 2 weeks just off the coast. On Wednesday, the ship began to sink, unleashing what is becoming one of the worst ecological disasters in that country's history.
Wow.
Tons of tiny plastic pellets spilled from shipping containers that fell into the sea have swamped the island's coastline and fishing grounds, blanketing beaches as far as 75 miles to the south, with multiple reports of dead fish, birds, and sea turtles already washing up on shore. In climate news, a new study has calculated that more than one-third of the world's heat deaths each year are directly caused by man-made global warming. The international team of researchers examined heat deaths in more than 700 cities from 1991 to 2018, comparing observed temperatures with computer models, simulating a world without climate change, finding that nearly 40% of heat deaths were caused by higher temperatures intensified by human-caused global warming. In the U.S., more than 1,000 heat deaths a year, or about 35%, were attributed to climate change. A different U.S.-only study has found that power grid failures have nearly doubled in the U.S. since 2015 and calculated that the combination of blackouts and extreme heat, quote, may be the deadliest climate-related event we can imagine when indoor temperatures rise above 90 degrees Fahrenheit. The researchers found the risk from heat exposure is highest in low-income households that can't afford air conditioning. In an interview with CBS, study author Brian Stone of Georgia Tech said cooling centers in the three major cities they studied could only accommodate about 2% of the total population.
That really raises questions around what is the level of preparedness for what is a very high health risk and something that's immediate in terms of its timing. This is not, you know, decades into the future. This is this summer.
I will answer that question. We're not prepared at all.
Another new analysis finds that the record winter storm that devastated Texas in February, causing a massive power outage, killed hundreds more people than the official state tally. A new analysis conducted by BuzzFeed News calculated that the true number of people killed by the storm and the blackout is likely four or five times higher than the 100 or so deaths the state has officially acknowledged so far.
We're talking about hundreds killed.
Yes. Intensifying drought spreading across the U.S. West has set in motion water cutbacks on the Colorado River. Some cutbacks to Arizona and Nevada had already begun, but late last week, the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation warned Arizona and Nevada to brace for further cuts. Sparse snowpack this winter melted quickly during the hot, dry spring, producing little runoff, helping to deplete reservoirs across the region. Lake Powell on the Colorado River is at just a third of its capacity. Lake Mead near Las Vegas is at just 38% of capacity. If it falls to 22%, Arizona will lose its entire allotment.
Wow.
Finally, some good news.
Thank you.
The Biden Interior Department has suspended all Trump-era oil and gas leases in Alaska's pristine Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, pending a reassessment of environmental impacts of drilling in the region. The department suspended nearly a dozen leases on the grounds that Trump officials rushed the lease auction and did not follow proper procedures, including required environmental reviews, violating the National Environmental Policy Act. The suspension will require a new environmental analysis, which will be time-consuming and is also likely to spark a lengthy court battle.
Bring it on. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Way up north to Alaska. Way up north to Alaska. North to Alaska, I go north to rush his own. North to
yeah.
Alaska.
Johnny Horton. Wow, that's what a trip. Thanks to Brad and Desi for that, and thank you to Jeremy for getting us started. We are one-third of the way through Joey and Giraffe's You Go Girls Challenge, and that leaves $20 to go on that, and that'll get us down under... Oh, that'd get us to 480, which would be really, really helpful as we try to get the month of June started. So, again, thanks for that. Moving on, well, staying in line with the right-wing weirdos of the Great Northwest, there's a gubernatorial campaign in Idaho. Ammonium Nitrate Bundy is campaigning to be the governor of Idaho. There's a little bit of a problem, though. He's banned from entering the capital because you know, the capital, the capital of Idaho, that is. And he can't go in it, which would make it kind of hard for him to be governor. Because along, before, just as was the case in Oregon, before the U.S. Capitol was attacked, the Idaho State Capitol was attacked by a gang of punk-ass thugs and pissants led by Ammonium Nitrate Bundy. And it's causing some consternation in that state. And my God, you can't just dismiss all of that because, you know, shit, they might have a chance. One woman, an Ada County, Idaho commissioner, former, Diana Lachiando, we talked about her on this program. Back in December, she got an urgent phone call from her 12-year-old son because Ammonium Nitrate Bundy's thugs were banging on the front door of her home. They were blowing air horns. They were shouting, "Tyranny!" She said, "I do believe it's an escalation. I'm a fourth-generation Idahoan. Been here longer than Ammon Bundy, I'll tell you that. I've never seen people treat each other the way we have in the past year." And Ammonium Nitrate Bundy, who, you know, like I said, is banned from even entering the Capitol and got himself held in contempt because he chained himself to a chair because freedom and he didn't want to wear no face diaper. Oh, God. It was August when they stormed the Idaho Capitol building. And, you know, when we see the January 6th didn't happen as an isolated event. It had precursors. And now he's got this ginned up group of pissants that he calls the People's Rights Campaign. And it all and this is what happens when you don't punish right-wing terrorists. Remember, Ammonium Nitrate Bundy, after he attacked the Malheur Wildlife Refuge, he attacked a bird sanctuary because freedom. He largely got away with it. He got a walk. And the federal government treated him, the Obama administration, federal, they treated him with kid gloves. Whereas, I remember talking about the story at the time, what, back in 2014? There were other instances of occupations of federal facilities that were met with much more force. But, you know, these were white people, right? It's like something Ron and Raleigh said a minute ago. Remember, all white people are not Nazis. But all Nazis are white people. Truth is a bitch. And these are the Lulus who talk, you know, the water belongs to us. We got all the water rights. Federal government can't come in there. And so now you've got an avowed ally of the free percenters, Lieutenant Governor Janice McEachin, and she's attended, among other things, mask burning events that Bundy's bunch promoted. And while the incumbent governor was out of town, she stepped in and banned mask mandates. And the incumbent GOP governor, Brad Little, well, he's still undecided as or hasn't announced whether he's going to run for re-election. There are parts of this country, if not all of the country, where shit is getting weirder and weirder and weirder. And Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, and that thing on his head, he's out braying and hooting after the Freedom of Information Act release of the Fauci emails. God, they'll probably find some reference to QAnon in there if they look hard enough. And it's all, a lot of this is centering on what Dr. Fauci was saying about masks early in the pandemic. In one email, he said masks are really for infected people to prevent them from spreading infection to people who are not infected rather than protecting uninfected people from acquiring infection. The typical mask you buy in the drugstore is not really effective in keeping out virus, which is small enough to pass through material. It might, however, provide some slight benefit to keeping out gross droplets if someone coughs or sneezes on you. And early on, he was saying, no, not so much on the masks. But being a scientist, they continued to do science. And they learned otherwise. But over on Twitter, Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, used the hashtag #FireFauci and said, told you, can't wait to see the media try to spin the Fauci FOIA emails. Good God. It's, you know, it's every damn day with that sick freak.
You dick!
Yeah. So somehow or another, Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, seems to think that he's vindicated because the science was evolving about mask wearing. And Dr. Fauci has pointed that out, that the literature is the scientific literature is changing and growing like we would expect science to do. It's, you know, it's not at all clear that Dr. Fauci did anything wrong. But, oh, my God, if you walk around the fever swamp of the right wing. Whew. Well, we had the clip from Kali Maganini playing to the audience of one. And what service does Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, think he's delivering to his constituents? Yeah, I'm licked. Now, earlier we had the story of Clint Taws down in Effingham County, Georgia. And that story was noteworthy for the bravery that Mr. Taws demonstrated in leaving his job when he was told that he could not even answer questions about the insurrection. Compare that with a pissy little bitch of a guy, pardon the phrase, named Brian Tanner Cross in Loudoun County, Virginia. Now, Loudoun County, Virginia is extremely wealthy. But Brian Tanner Cross is an elementary school teacher, and he's a football coach. So he knows about life lessons. And he has filed a lawsuit against the Loudoun County Board of Education of some 45 pages. He says that he was retaliated against after he went to a public school board meeting and commented, based on my expertise and experience,
hoping to inform the public and assist the board's evaluation.
Because the school board was taking up the issue of, oh my God, gender-related pronouns. And allowing little trans boys to be he, him, and little trans girls to be she, her, and non-binaries to be they, thems. And there's a connection, and I didn't get to this a couple of, well, Sunday before last, and I'm sorry about that. There's a connection to a 60 Minutes piece that ran, Leslie Stahl, doing a horrible job. It was supposedly an expose on trans kids and health and transgender medical care. Instead, in true multimillionaire for-profit media fashion, they turned it into a sympathy piece for detransitioners who represent like something like less than 1% of people who transition. And the nastiest part of it, this 60 Minutes piece, was they deliberately left out, they edited out comments by well-known medical experts who pointed out that detransition's really not that big of an issue. It doesn't happen that much, and it isn't nearly as grievous as what it is put forward to be. But lo and behold, Brian Tanner Cross, or Byron, not Brian, Byron Tanner Cross went to the school board meeting and opined as follows. And you can almost guess what he went into. Hold on here. Works better if I unmute it. It really does. Here we go.
I'm speaking out of love for those who suffer with gender dysphoria. 60 Minutes this past Sunday interviewed...
Now, let's get it all. I don't want to screw this up. He's speaking out of love. Now, any time that a Christian tells you that they're speaking out of love, you can pretty well predict that, especially the evangelical-type Christians like this freak. You can pretty much be guaranteed that what's about to come out of their filthy gobs is hate.
My name is Tanner Cross, and I'm speaking out of love for those who suffer with gender dysphoria. 60 Minutes this past Sunday interviewed over 30 young people who transitioned, but they felt led astray because lack of pushback or how easy it was to make physical changes to their bodies in just 3 months. They are now detransitioning. It's not my intention to hurt anyone, but there are certain truths that we must face when ready. We condemn school policies like 8040 and 8035 because it will damage children, defile the holy image of God. I love all of my students, but I will never lie to them regardless of the consequences. I'm a teacher, but I serve God first, and I will not affirm that a biological boy can be a girl and vice versa because it's against my religion, it's lying to a child, it's abuse to a child, and it's sinning against our God.
Yeah. So basically what he said is that no matter what the upshot of that is that no matter what the board does, if they affirm the use of the preferred pronouns, that he's going to go ahead and violate board policy. Well, they took him at his word. They accepted that Byron Tanner Cross football, and remember, he said he has expertise on issues of gender. I don't know where he got it. Maybe from, I don't know, I guess he thinks he's an expert because Bible. We condemn school policies. I don't know who, him and that mouse in his pocket. And a little kid, a little transgender kid being able to be comfortable in their own skin defiles the holy image of God. Did no one tell Byron Tanner Cross that the Loudoun County school system is not a church school, that it's not a parochial school. Yeah. According to his lawsuit, he says he was called into a meeting 2 days after the board meeting, and he was eventually told he was being investigated for conduct that has had a disruptive impact on the operations of the elementary school. And he says that he was later told that the action was taken because of what he said to the school board. And in particular, that the school board acted, and, well, here, because a lot of parents in that school called the school board and said, don't you let that sick, vicious, hate-filled, goddamn freak anywhere near my child. No contact with our children. So since he's, you know, since he is so delicate and so dainty, this football coach, he says that, well, you know, it doesn't have anything to do with what I said about children who have gender dysphoria. It's about whether public schools can punish a teacher for objecting as a private citizen to a proposed policy in a forum designed for the purpose of considering whether to implement such policies where the policy would force him to express ideas about human nature unrelated to the school's curriculum that he believes are false. Well, that's the problem. He wasn't speaking as a private citizen. He may have thought that he was, but he's a teacher and a football coach. And he showed up at the board meeting because there are children supported by their parents who want to use their chosen gender identity pronouns different from what they were assigned at birth. And Loudoun County, being in Northern Virginia, which is a fairly liberal area, was also going to say, was also considering a policy change that would allow students to participate in extracurricular activities, including sports, based on their gender identity rather than their sex assigned at birth. But now he is pogo-sticked up onto the cross. Well, yeah, you're absolutely right. Stephen New York says, detransitioning. It's the new ex-gay bullshit. And it's exactly that. And the fact that CBS deliberately did not include in its package the expert opinion of people who know far more about it than anybody, Leslie Stahl included at CBS, will ever know about it, about gender dysphoria, tells you what CBS's agenda was. I got to watch what it was that they clipped out, and it was very important. But it would not have fit the narrative that somebody at CBS at 60 Minutes wanted that piece to have. It was infuriating. I watched it later, and it was just, oh, God, where's a brick? Because of my religion, Steve in New York adds, you probably already know this, but it occurs to me that these hateful fucks know how to sprinkle their faith in there to eventually make a case of simple insubordination, one about religious discrimination. Well, yeah, they're the most delicate snowflakes out there. And Arthur points out, gender pronouns, accepting that trans people exist, is against my religion. Exactly. It's just another way to try to make, and children, you know, not full grown adults like me, but me too, because, you know, potty, disappear. It is a sociocultural genocide. Somebody else disappeared, a bunch of trans and gay people, once upon a time. Jeremy in Vermont says that 60 Minutes piece seemed an awfully large amount of a hit piece on the community than it was to help understanding. As for detransition, I've rarely heard of it and don't think we should all be judged by isolated events in transition. Well, I detransitioned. I'm an ex-detransitioner. I tried for about 6 months early in this century. And because I could not stand the pressure associated with transitioning at a time when my father was still alive and a lot of my elders in my family were still alive, and I didn't want to deal with all the questions, and I certainly didn't want to deal with all the hate, because they were good Christians to the last, to the very last one, and that would have meant just a cacophony of hate upon my head. I detransitioned. And it was one of the most awful, painful experiences I ever had in my entire life. My at the time I started, I was about 215 pounds. About 10 pounds lighter than I am now. 20 years younger. And in the years following my detransition, my weight ballooned up to about near 300 pounds. And I think I was getting into COPD, smoking like a freight train, and probably heart failure. And it was pain every step of the way. And so when we finally reached the decision, because I did it in consultation with my beloved partner, to transition, it was never again. This, I will not turn back. And there are always going to be potholes in the road. It's not easy. And there are going to be painful moments. Some physically painful, some spiritually painful, some both. But for the most part, I've been happier than I've ever been in my life. I can't do anything about my 6'2" height. Like I said before, I can't do anything about my huge feet. I can't do anything about the body shape that a lifetime of testosterone poisoning gave me. But I can be happy in my own skin. And this guy daring to call himself a Christian while at the same time attacking children and saying that he would make them feel deliberately awful. Because that's what he was saying. When he says he won't use their pronouns, he's saying that he is willing to physically and mentally abuse them. Because the pronouns matter. It's really, really wild. I never expected it to. But getting my pronouns used is really special. And I thank everybody who calls this program and does it. And the people out in my community who do it. It's a wonderful moment of affirmation and acceptance. Lamar the Magnificent writing in, expert Byron, brother Byron received the certification from the side of the cereal box that he mailed in. Yeah, probably got a secret decoder ring with a compass in the stock or something. Byron Tanner Cross, Jack in Shreveport, says, maybe I got the name wrong. Anyway, every time I hear someone say their religion or God is held higher by them than some other rule, law, etc., they may run into, I know that's a person who cannot be counted on to follow the law or the Constitution. That's what we got with Amy Covid Barrett or whatever her name is. And Byron would not put the rights or welfare of any child student before what Byron believes his God and his religion require. Yeah. In other words, he is willing to harm children. Very simple advice for Byron Tanner Cross from Stephen, New York. Whatever happened to mind your own fucking business? Yeah, and we are blipping madly away Oh, for fuck's sake. Can't even stay connected. Okay. So. All right. I think we're back. I think we're reconnected. Oh, that's really infuriating. But we'll move on from Byron Tanner Cross. His stupid lawsuit is some 45 pages. Contains a two-page diatribe. Mr. Cross's philosophical and religious beliefs. Jesus. Mr. Cross believes that because of the difficulty of assessing matters of gender identity and the long-term irreversible consequences of certain treatments for transgender-identifying people, including hormone replacement therapy and sex reassignment surgery, children should not be encouraged to undertake social or medical transition because of their inability to assess long-term consequences. That's stupid. What was the phrase that the dead deputy from Denver used before he got all dead from COVID? Yeah, fuckstick. This stupid fuckstick thinks that psychologists and psychiatrists don't exist, doesn't understand the role of puberty blockers, which are used in cis children, not just trans, to stop precocious puberty. Children are not encouraged to undertake hormone replacement therapy. He's an elementary school teacher. Children in elementary school aren't even going to be on the puberty blockers. But children in elementary school can know and do know when their identity is out of kilter with what they've been assigned at birth. It's not a leap. A child knows if they're left-handed or right-handed. A child looks in the mirror and sees if they're blue-eyed or brown-eyed, green-eyed or hazel, whatever. But this guy thinks he knows better. And it's absolutely maddening. And as Steve pointed out, he says that his free speech and religious freedoms are being trampled. And he believes, based on scientific evidence, that there are only two anatomical sex presentations, except in very rare scientifically demonstrable medical circumstances. God immutably created male and female. And he has no idea that that kind of religious mummery is to have no place in a secular society nor in our government. And he says his right to freely exercise his religion is being violated under the Virginia Constitution and a state statute called the Act for Religious Freedom. So he's asking the court to fully reinstate him to his normal job. I don't know if he can do a job that's normal because he's clearly Abby. He wants an injunction that tells the school board to remove any disciplinary letters involving the matter from his personnel file. And he wants the court to order the school board and other officials from preventing him for expressing his views on gender identity education policy. He wants the court to order the school board of Loudoun County to allow him to abuse children. And of course, there's a punchline to all of this. No decent lawyer in private practice would touch this with a 20-foot battle lance. No, instead he's got lawyers from one of those religious grift law firms, the Alliance Defending Freedom, and they're giving him free lawyering. And if they win, they'll get attorney's fees. And what do you do if you're a parent of a trans child in whatever school he's in? What do you have to do to keep a sick man like that away from your precious baby? How terrified would you be every day to send your child to school knowing that your child may be accosted in the hallway by a monster like Byron Tanner Cross, the Christian? What would you do to defend your child against a good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical Christian like Byron Tanner Cross? And of course, there's a chance he'll win. Now, what should happen is that if he loses, as he should, the court should impose sanctions against the Alliance Defending Freedom for daring to bring a case before the court in which their plaintiff, their client, seeks to abuse children. That probably won't happen either. In other words, says Steve in New York, he wants special rights. Yes, because he's a special person. He's a Christian. Yeah, I'm sorry about the stream being such a hot mess. Darlene says, your stream's being messed with big time. This is upsetting because you're telling an important story and I'm beginning to wonder if somebody's messing with you and trying to block your pushback against that muscle head. I always wonder if it's content-based. But they can't affect the podcast. Is he Abby normal? Well, perhaps I'd say so. This jagoff, says Ron in Raleigh, would have told Elliot Page, nay, Ellen Page, that he was her, not he, because he knows better, because Jesus... P.S. I remember Christine Jorgensen when I was a kid. She transitioned in 1952. We seem to be more able to deal with this better then. Yeah, to a certain extent. But she was white, privileged, and she was very much a single individual. By the time you get to Marsha P. Johnson and her comrades at Stonewall, it's a completely different story. And that's a complicated history. Because the people who rebelled, the first person to throw a brick at the police at Stonewall, well, the narrative now is that it was trans women who got it all started, but not really. At the time, they identified as gay men. And getting lost in how we refer to them is a great way to lose the thread of the fact that people stood up against police harassment. And some of the first people to respond and to push back and to throw the bricks were people of color, black and brown people, Hispanic people, and they suffered. They suffered. And that's why, well, it's become very corporate, pride has become very corporate friendly. And I guess that's okay. But at the bottom level, it's still about people, and it's still about rights, and it's still about visibility. And it's about boys not being crucified on barbed wire fences in Wyoming, or trans women being murdered in Tennessee, Texas, and all over the country, to the rate of about one a day. Note coming from Cynthia. Oh, God, says Cynthia. And so we, you and I, had to suffer permanent consequences from testosterone poisoning. What a creep. And what an idiot Byron Tanner Cross is. I knew my body was wrong from my very first memory. I wish I could give him a piece of my mind. Bastard. I'm sure the parents of the trans kids in the school will. Because it's not like they're going to shrink away from him. You get near, you can, it doesn't take much to imagine it. You get near my child. You say a word to my child. And you're going to have problems you never even dreamed of. And then he'll go crying and, oh, they violated my religious freedom. Shut up. Matt in San Francisco says, Byron's rights have not been violated. No one's forcing him to transition to female. He can live out the rest of his bigoted days believing he has a direct line to his creator. He just can't push all his bullshit on other people. Why is that so hard for these fucks to understand? Well, because their Jesus told them that they get to. And the way they read it, they have to, or Jesus will have a sad. God almighty. Thank you, Matt. Megan says, every time I hear someone say that their practice of religion is being infringed upon because they can't enforce their prejudice against a vulnerable, marginalized group, I'd love to invite these whiners to wear a pentacle out in public for a day and then come back to me and whine about religious infringement. Well, amen to that. They're not happy being the majority. They're not happy being the dominant religion. They have to quash all dissent. They have to attack anyone who, by their very lives, represents a crease in their armor. Because their religion cannot withstand criticism. And that tells us a lot about the quality of their religion. And that's always, and the world over, that's religion's M.O. You can't question the religion, or we'll kill you, because God is love. You can't question the religion, because God's all-powerful. Well, you'd think God could take care of that. Oh, no, we'll take care of it for him. He's busy. Thank you, Megan. Robin, Megan says, much love to you and the rest of the trans community of the Horn. And I would say to the entire alphabet of the LGBTQIA+ community of the Horn. Megan says, please keep being you. And I'm going to. It's strange, painful sometimes, but like I said, I've never been happier than I have been for the last almost 9 months. That's the medical part. I started transitioning back last summer, socially. But thank you, Megan. Thank you. Yeah, Arthur, stop infringing on Tanner's religious right to burn trans and heretics at the stake, Robin. I know. Burn them. Burn some sense into them. That's what we need is a good, what we need is a good steak burning. That'll show those uppity trans people. As I am beginning to be more wont to say, WONT, says Steve in New York, what does God need with a starship? I know. Go figure. Most powerful force in the universe, and somehow or another, can't quite manage to do his own work. Yeah. Oh, and thank you. Jumping in alongside Jeremy, Jack in Shreveport, just finished off the rest of Joey's challenge, so that gets us down to 480. 475, actually, which is awesome. So thank you again, Jack and Jeremy. It would be great to keep knocking it down, maybe get it down to, could we do another $180? Is that possible in the next hour or so? And the blippery is just driving me mad this evening. I apologize for that. And this. Oh, my God. It's almost it, well, you'd like to think that no, but you look at it and you go, nah, it's America. And for it, of course, we have to go to Florida Man. Complicated story, this. Beats the this stuff just beats the daylights out of me. The story comes, the dateline on the story is Miami. And it concerns a father by the name of Michael Williams. He's 26 years old. He's got a 10-year-old son. Do the math. Children having children. And remember, the human brain is not done fully wiring itself until 28 or maybe 30. And so, 10-year-old son says to 26-year-old daddy, Daddy, I need to go to Apalaca and do a drive-by shooting with my paintball gun. Remember, I just said that the human brain is not done wiring until 28, 30. And 26-year-old daddy says, Groovy, let's do it, son. It'll be a great father and son activity for us. So he drives the kid to Opa-locka, and they pull up at a house where a crowd is gathered. We are not necessarily told what the crowd was for. One assumes that perhaps it was some sort of party for one of his classmates or member of his peer group. Maybe he was pissed off about he wasn't at the party. But anyway, 26-year-old Michael Williams with his son in the car pull up at the house, and the kid, the 10-year-old, begins to pepper the crowd with paintballs. And there were other young people about his age in the yard, we're told by the Miami Herald. But the person who lived at the home, an adult by the name of Gregory Barnes, thought, because of the paintball fire, that, well, I mean, he lives in South Florida. So he thought his family and friends were under attack, so he went and got his real, live, honest-to-God, not-a-paintball freedom protector, and began returning fire. He returned paintball fire with hot lead. And he hit the 10-year-old. What, this is a terrible story. But it's what happened, you know. So he hits the kid in the shoulder. Well, I don't know that it was. He wounded the boy. And then he lost it. The little boy, the 10-year-old, lost his balance and got run over by his daddy's van. Daddy then jumps out of the van, picks his son up, puts the son back in the van, having been shot and run over by his dad, shot by the homeowner, run over by his dad, puts him in the car, drives him back home, where his mom then calls 911. Apparently, Michael Williams, 26, bonded out somehow, but he has been charged with child neglect with great bodily harm by the state of Florida upon an allegation that he acted recklessly by agreeing to conduct a drive-by paintball shooting in South Florida, where everybody has a gun. And wow. So, I don't know if Children and Family Services or Child Protective Services or whatever they call it in Florida, I don't know if they've gone in and taken the child out of the home. I don't know if an improvement plan and an improvement period would be granted. I don't know. The Miami Herald reported it was unclear if Williams had an attorney. Information on his case has yet to be posted online. He was no longer listed as being in a Miami-Dade jail. You know what's not in this story? Gregory Barnes, the resident of the house in Opa-locka, being charged with shooting the little boy. Because Florida. Because nobody, no cop in South Florida is going to charge anybody for returning fire. That's obviously self-defense. Even if it was only a paintball gun. Well, how could he know that? I don't know, the splattering of paint? That generally doesn't happen with real firearms. The only thing that splatters with real firearms is blood. Ah, well, you know, maybe the kid was using red paint. Woo! Oh, my God. So, no charge, because, you know, in Florida, you can stand and blaze. I mean, the other side doesn't even have to have a paintball gun. The other side could just have, oh, I don't know, an Arizona iced tea and some Skittles and get blown away. Because fearful. Well, I'm sure Gregory Barnes is so glad that he had his Freedom Protector handy. But there's no defense for the dad. The hell? Was he drunk? Was he high? I mean, I can't imagine, you know, maybe 26-year-old Michael Williams was sitting around smoking a fatty, and the kid comes, hey, Dad, will you take me to go shoot my friends with a paintball gun? Oh, kid, that sounds like such a great idea. No! Whew! And, great bodily harm. I guess getting shot and then run over. But it would have been nice to have had a little bit more information from the Miami Herald about the child's condition. Boy shot by a scared resident. Great heavenly days. Oh, it's who we are. Right? Yeah, sure. It's who we are. Oh, and by the way, you know, this is a conversation radio program. You are not required to, but if there's something you'd like to get said, you are welcome to join in the conversation. I would... well, that's true. The dad's kid, Michael, it wasn't as... Randy in PA points out, snacking while black. And going back to the Byron Tanner Cross story, Haley in Arkansas said, that cat of yours is angry too about that transphobic teacher. I can hear the meowing in the background. Oh, he has no patience whatsoever for transphobia. He is an ally cat. See what I did there? Ally cat? Huh? Please? You don't get that quality of punnery on the other radio programs. Ally Cat. I'm just proud. Yeah, Florida equals stand your ground. Darlene in Connecticut says, remind me never to retire in that state. Unfortunately, ain't too many choices for warm climes that are sane states on this seaboard. Yeah, that would be zero. None. I mean, well, you know, maybe Delaware, Maryland, but it still gets blue-ass cold in winter there. Yeah, you wrap around the United States in North Carolina, South Carolina, nope. Georgia, nope. Maybe Georgia. The Georgia coast is lovely. Florida, nope. Alabama, nope. Mississippi, nope. Louisiana, nope. Texas, nope. And then you're done with the Gulf and the Atlantic. So then you got it's California, Washington, Oregon, all of which are lovely. Florida shooter, Stephen, New York, says, I'll be honest, I'm having a hard time finding much criminal fault with the shooter, and I fucking hate guns. I think a civil suit from the kid would be appropriate with any damages going into a trust so his dumbass father can't get it. Amen to that. Maybe the kid would be better off not growing up in that home. That, too. And, yeah, a jury would probably, neither a cop nor a jury would probably have anything to do with the person who did the shooting. And maybe I'm being uncharitable. Maybe Gregory Barnes is full of grief and remorse for having plugged a 10-year-old. But, so, I mean, it's not like it was a paintball sniper rifle, Steve. It's not like the kid was in hiding. I mean, what, was he shooting from behind the van? How did the guy not know that it was a kid? But then again, there was a story, because this is Merca, the greatest country in the history of the world on Earth, now, today, in the universe, forever, under God. And some sheriff's deputies got a report of a couple of juveniles breaking into a home. A 14-year-old and a 12-year-old, a girl and a boy. And when they responded, the 14-year-old and the 12-year-old unleashed on them with stolen semi-automatic weapons, not paintball guns. And I had some sympathy for the sheriff when he stepped to the microphone to speak to the press and said, "What the hell is going on here?" Kind of reminiscent of Slim Pickens asking, "What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?" He said, if that had been me, the sheriff did, and I can't remember what state it was in. If that had been me and I heard about kids breaking into a house, I would have walked in there and I'd be dead. So the kids, the 12-year-old and the 14-year-old, are being charged as adults with attempted murder. Well, the NRA must be ever, ever, ever so happy. Yeah. Let's run over and check in with Steve in New York. Hey, Steve.
Good. What is this, evening?
Evening.
Yeah. Regarding the guy in in Florida. I made my comment because I don't know. I'm a little bit. Well, I feel like I would have to have more information. What the scene that went through my mind was, you know, a party at someone's house where there's a bunch of people, and the father comes out, not really, you know, and this kid is firing. People are running about. He doesn't quite know what's going on. I mean, if it turns out it's different than that, certainly I would, that would mitigate my response, but
Florida won't, because you can stand and blaze for any reason or no reason in Florida.
No, I understand, but I'm saying in terms of my own opinion.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if now that Cocknocker is out of the White House, we don't have tweets every day to distract us. Maybe that's part of it. But good Jesus, the weirdness, and you mentioned this earlier, is just what?
I know.
Kids breaking into houses.
To steal weapons, to ambush cops.
There's shit happening that if my grandparents were alive,
they would not believe that this wasn't their country.
No, they wouldn't believe it. You know, I'm going to posit something, and maybe I'm sounding like some old...
Get off my lawn!
Yeah, maybe I'm sounding like that. I'll tell a story.
Okay.
A number of years ago, I remember when iPods, is that what those were? It's been so long.
Yeah.
iPods, that was the first thing that came out where you would have the little thing. You can put your music on there and listen to it. I remember being at the gym one time, and the gym was somewhat crowded, and people were on their treadmills and their stair steppers and all that. A bunch of people there, all of them with headphones on. And it occurred to me, I'm watching a bunch of people in a room, none of them speaking to each other, none of them interacting with their surroundings, each basically in their own little, literally their own little bubbles.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember thinking to myself, I thought, you know, this doesn't look like a good thing. When we begin to have people who do not interact, who do not speak to one another, who do not develop the ability to communicate, who do not go through the ups and downs of friends and meeting people on the street and, you know, kids telling other kids to fuck off and, you know, all this kind of stuff where it's all verbal. Oh, I love you and you're wonderful and you're shit. These are verbal things and they're words which, you know, can hurt, but nobody's going to die from being called a whatever. When people don't have that practice ever, and particularly kids, it makes me wonder if we are seeing the fruits of that really bad, those examples of such a lack of communication. And fast forward to now, I can't tell you how many times I've seen a family of two young parents and two young children, for instance, sitting at a table in a restaurant, none of them talking to one another, and all of them, all four of them, each on their individual phones, looking at their phones.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm beginning to wonder if...
Adults do it too, Steve.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. And These are adults. These are 20-something, 30-something adults who would have grown up 20 or 30 years ago, or not even 20 or 30 years ago, because, you know, the iPod is a fairly recent thing, but who would have grown up in an era in which, excuse me, I sometimes have an issue with people in my neighborhood for some reason driving by with... I mean, they will actually put full blown stereo speakers in their back window and play the music outward. It's a cultural thing, obviously. I don't get it, but
status. Know. It's a status thing.
thing. I told my roommate I was going to put a bunch of bricks and start throwing them at them.
Don't do that.
Yeah, no, I know. I just, this is another reason why I hate cops is it would take the cops about two tickets of $1,000 each to make it stop, but cops are useless. But back to my, you know, my man yells at cloud thing or man bites dog thing. I'm beginning to wonder if that has something to do with something with these 12 and 14 year olds going into a house to steal guns.
Well, I got a little I got a little background on that that may help.
And let me say one thing real quick, and then I'll shut up and listen. I find it so repulsive to charge these kids as adults, because here we are, you know, in one hand we're saying these are adults, and another hand if those kids were in school saying, hey, I'm gay, or I feel like a young trans kid, then they're, oh, well, they're just too fucking young to even understand what's going on here. You know, and the notion of, we should look at kids who do things like this as not damaged beyond repair, but you know, redeemable, for lack of a better term. And I don't mean that in a religious sense, but you know, I mean, you know, that I admit that that's something left over from my religious upbringing and whatever. Is I have a hard time finding anybody irredeemable, and I mean, that's one of the reasons I am against the death penalty, is I don't want to think that anybody can't, you know, truly be, and again, I don't mean this in the religious sense, to be repentant or to be penitent about things that they've done in the past, and particularly a kid. But anyway, I'll shut up and listen.
Well, there is some detail here. The 12-year-old and the 14-year-old were in an emergency shelter care program. Mm-hmm. They ran, it's a group home, and those places, I mean, just think about the story earlier in the program about the good God fearing upstanding Bible believing Christ centered evangelical fundamentalist homosexual Christians who were indicted, you know, the man for raping and abusing little girls in his custody at his girls' ranch. And the mama who, the wife who went along with it, those places can be hell spaces. And these two, the 12-year-old boy and the 14-year-old girl, had run away together from a group home in Florida, broke into the house, and when deputies showed up, they opened fire. How traumatized. I know. Liberals don't, you know, they just want to understand. They're sympathetic. But how traumatized must two children be for that to be what they perceive to be their option? They start shooting when the cops show up after they break into a house.
Well,
now,
what is that?
The homeowner, let's get as many details as we possibly can.
Okay. I'm sorry about that.
The homeowner that whose home they broke into later told law enforcement, well, yeah, I had an AK-47 and a pistol and a shotgun and a whole shit ton of ammunition. And yes, this was the Volusia County Sheriff's Office, Volusia County, Florida. And the house was surrounded by deputies, and they started trying to negotiate and talk the children out. The 14-year-old, according to the 12-year-old, had said, I'm going to roll this down like GTA. GTA meaning the video game Grand Theft Auto.
The kid said that.
Yeah. And eventually, she walked out. The 14-year-old came out and according to the cops, pointed a shotgun at deputies twice. So they shot her and wounded her. She was in critical but stable condition as of yesterday. Little boy wasn't hurt.
Wounded her.
Yes.
Something tells me she was probably white.
Well, I don't know, because I can't roll the video.
Okay.
But the meanwhile, the sheriff praised his officers for their restraint and went on yesterday and blasted the group home where the children were kept, the Florida United Methodist Children's Home, and he said, that place has been a problem since I've been sheriff. Deputies were called to the group home 289 times last year, 89 times so far this year.
So about once a day.
Yeah. And the president and CEO of Florida United Methodist Children's Home, Katwana McTyre, said, it's a child welfare facility, not a secure care facility. We're mandated by regulations that we're not allowed to restrain children unless they're at risk of injuring themselves or others around them. The children's home is mandated to contact law enforcement once a child breaches the perimeter of our property because it then becomes a community issue. Therefore, while there are many calls to the sheriff's department in a given year, it's important to note that not all calls are emergent in nature. And of course, you know, because when all your problems look like nails, all your solutions will look like hammers. The sheriff said, that home is not capable of handling violent youth offenders. And in point of fact, a security officer at the group home was attacked and killed by a 14-year-old boy this past April. Now, it's more complicated than meets the... But the overall question of how the hell do children get like this...
That's the real question here.
Yeah.
I mean, all we want to do is say, well, the reason they're that way is because nobody beat them enough. And I'm going to tell you something. When I heard... When something you said really stuck out at me. The guy who at the facility says we're not allowed to restrain them, and I'm thinking, well, it's not like that's the only way to discipline kids, or that's the on the other hand, though, I suspect that there's probably violence going on there. There's screaming and yelling at each other going on there. The kids don't feel safe there.
And there are some mean ass kids there. What the sheriff went on to say is, we're arresting these kids in the state of Florida for violent crimes, and the Department of Juvenile Justice wants to put them into places that can't handle them. The legislature's got to make changes. Restorative justice is getting people killed, getting people hurt. Bang, okay? The use of that phrase by that white sheriff tells you just about everything you need to know. He doesn't like restorative justice. He doesn't like it when little black kids don't get the shit punished out of them. He wants to teach a lesson.
You know, I hate to sound like, this is just another example. I mean, think about this. Everything in our country, or it seems like much of how we interact on a throughout the commons, in public, is this neo-Calvinist bullshit. You know, think about how we're treating these kids. Think about kids in schools. Think also about how we treat our elderly in this country. We stick them in the home. And I know sometimes that's necessary. And particularly when you have a society that is as transient, as mobile as ours is, the notion of taking care of extended family at home, it's probably less possible in our country than it would in other countries that might be more established cultures / societies, bigger families, and stronger social institutions. I mean, let's be honest here too. I mean, look, I freely express my opinion about churches and whatnot. But, and again, I can only speak from my own experience. And I will say plenty of bad things about Rome when it when, or Catholicism, or the, I'll say the Catholic Church, when I only talk about that when I talk about it, because that's all I know. I don't know anything else. But I think about one of my very best friends here in New York. When he was growing up, he lived in an Irish Catholic neighborhood. There was a, you know, the parish church was more than just a place you went on Sundays. There were activities there. It was a central area where everyone kind of knew each other. And lest anyone think I'm being pro-religion here, hear me out.
Well, no, through time immemorial, and you know, whether it's the Temple of Ishtar, or the Temple of Ra, or the Temple of Huitzilopochtli, or, you know, a cathedral, or a basilica, a parish church,
whatever.
Those are all social centers.
And whether it's the Boys Club, or whether it's the YMCA, or we don't seem to have those. And again, I don't remember particularly those. For me, when I was growing up, you know, I came from my parents were divorced when I was four. My dad was remarried when I was, I don't know, however old I was. My mom was remarried and divorced and remarried again. But even with all of that, I never, you know, I don't want to say I can't relate. But I look and I think, I would never have thought to go into a house, break into a house, and, you know, steal guns and shoot up the cops. I just wouldn't. I refuse to say, well, it's only a matter of we didn't hit them hard enough. We didn't discipline. It's not that.
No, and that's the whole point. That's another fact that plays into this story, and it's complicated and it's tragic.
Have you ever heard of Gary Gilmore?
Oh yeah, yeah yeah.
You ever read the book Shot in the Heart?
No. But I wanted to just bring up one other thing. The sheriff is appearing. It appears the sheriff is using this children's home as a stalking horse, and it. Can and those places can be hellscapes, but the bottom line is that Florida United Methodist Children's Home is not a Department of Juvenile Justice facility. Kids charged with violent crimes aren't put there. They are in. It is in fact a place for children who have been abandoned, abused, and neglected.
Well, and why would you expect kids to do anything different than what they did?
But abandonment, abuse, and neglect can manifest in all manner of acting out behavior, especially when you take children and you put them into a foreign, you know the sense in which I'm using that word, environment.
An alien environment.
Yeah, and they have already come through something that has been bad enough to get them yanked out of their own homes because their parents were horrible. And so, you know, you're going, and what the woman who runs the place says, you know, she says, we have a 113-year history of successfully caring for abused, abandoned, and neglected children. I'm sorry, the man, McTire. Our mission is empowering children and families to experience the transforming love of Christ through holistic care. Yeah, okay, I can do without the religious language, but, you know, that's their mission, and, you know, the looking after the helpless and healing the sick and the wounded. And, I mean, that's what Jesus said to go do. But I'm disturbed by the fact that this sheriff wanted to use this place that's not a juvenile justice facility as a stalking horse for a policy that he, in his whiteness, apparently despises. And that's the concept of restorative justice, where we don't just automatically warehouse children in the home-to-prison pipeline, and largely because they're black or brown. I mean, I really do want to know why a 12-year-old and a 14-year-old would break into a home and grab guns and start shooting.
Because you wouldn't have done that. Why would... And I wouldn't have done that. Why would I have not? I mean, listen, I just told you. I came from... I had divorce all throughout my childhood. I went to... By the time I was in ninth grade, I'd gone to something like 8 different schools.
Were you a mess?
No! I was very good in school. I was very, very good in school. Didn't get into trouble. I mean, probably when I got into, you know, 10th and 11th grade, particularly at home, I wasn't the best, but there were other reasons for that I won't get into. But it never would have occurred to me to do this shit. I mean, now that I'm sitting here thinking about it, I did do something. I've never hurt anybody. I've never been, you know, and I actually had people tell me I should have because people hurt me. Not my family, just people at school. But I don't know,
Are you saying you're at a loss to figure out how it is that children wind up like this?
Yeah. I mean, no, wait, no, let me rephrase that. I'm not at a loss in the general sense. It's not rocket surgery to say something went wrong in their bringing up, in their upbringing. Something went wrong there. And not something, but some things went wrong there.
Everything.
Yeah. They didn't get what a kid needs. What that is, I don't know. Because I didn't get a lot of that stuff. So what about me? Wasn't I more this way? And I just don't know. And I bring up the Gary Gilmore. Here's why I bring up that book. And I would suggest that book to people. It's called Shot Heart. And it describes in there the utter chaos of Gary Gilmore growing up with his family moving around and his father being gone for months at a time and not having a place to stay all the time and always being transient and being evicted, thrown out and not knowing sometimes where the next meal would come from. And you read that and you think, oh, maybe those simple things of having a place to stay that you don't have to worry about as a kid, because kids aren't stupid. When mom and dad, or just mom or just dad, is worried about, oh shit, how am I going to be evicted? Where's the next meal going to come from? Kids sense that. They know it. They can sense, and they may not know exactly what it is that the parents are stressed and fearful of, but they can sense the fear and stress. Whatever turmoil I may have had, I never felt like that they didn't care for me. I never felt like they didn't love me. I never felt like I wasn't going to have a place to stay or food to eat. I gotta think that given everything else, those are the things that, you know, gave me any, you know, I didn't feel the need to lash out, et cetera, like these kids do. I mean, what else, you know, what else could it be given the external factors?
Well, there's a little bit more detail. The 12-year-old boy has been in foster care since he was 8 years old. No prior criminal history, but he does have... there were some previous reports. This year, he's had trouble in school. At one point, he threatened to throw a brick at an administrator. And then 5 days later, he said he would kill a student and spread his guts all over the bleachers. The girl, the 14-year-old, on the other hand, burned down a home this past April. That's what the sheriff said, but then he went back and checked and said, no. She set fires in a wooded lot that came close to burning homes.
Okay.
And this is... Well, you probably heard it in law school. You know, hard cases make bad law. This is, you know... Horrible things must have happened to these children. It's almost unavoidable reaching that conclusion. And it's called acting out behavior. And, I mean, I learned a lot about it when... Because, you know, for 5 years, every misdemeanor that came through my county, I handled. Every felony that came through my county, I handled. Every presentation that was made to a grand jury, I presented. Every abuse case that came through, I was on it. Every neglect case mm-hmm. that came through, I was on it. And I paid attention while the behavioral health professionals were testifying about what it was like to be these children and what they were going through and what they suffered from and what the sequelae were to having been subjected to. And it was a little bitty nothing of a county, but anywhere USA can be an absolute shitstorm in the lower economic reaches of the population, because that's where most of it happens, because those are the only people who ever find their way into the system. It's happening in the wealthier classes too, but they kind of keep it on the down low.
And those kids go to the expensive rehab areas, places, etc.
Yeah. And we've got a little input from Todd in South Carolina, who says, please tell Steve, it's called resiliency. It is not common. Most kids don't have the type of resiliency to defeat many obstacles in life. Steve is of a different generation, and things are different now. Kids are having a lot more to deal with as they receive the same information as adults, but do not have the same tools to process such information. And you find these things out... when you work, you know, in or around a facility for abused, neglected, and adjudicated youth. You know, on the one hand, you're torn because you're saying, oh, you know, these poor children. And then the poor children begin acting out the same behaviors that were inflicted upon them, and it's hard to say poor children anymore. Because they've been taken to hell and taught their lessons. This is awful shit.
Yeah, I just wish that we would. And look, I'm not profound. This isn't new. You know, I'm not saying anything that people haven't said a million times. But look, what does this, and the way we treat people in this country, even under the law, you know, the elderly, the young. And people in their working lives throughout the part of their life that those two things bookend. We're not a pro-family country. This is not a pro-person country.
No.
It's pro-person only to the extent of your economic worth. Beyond that...
And that's the Calvinism you were talking about.
Yeah. Beyond that, it's... You know, I've been doing an awful lot of listening to, you know, journalism, etc., in Canada and some stuff in the UK. The one thing I have realized is we're not alone in this. I don't know. I don't... You know, it just the more I live, and again, I don't mean to sound like, you know, Grandpa Simpson here.
Sometimes our inner Grandpa Simpson gets loose.
Okay. But we have been treating each other like shit for millennia, and I...
Well, this nation, you know. I know it gives the little snowflake Republicans a sad when I say something like this, but this country was pretty much founded on treating each other like shit.
But I don't think that's unique to here.
No, but it was but the guise under which we did it was unique. We treat each other like shit and call it freedom.
Yeah, I would probably say, and I think one of the, and I've said this before on, you know, on the front porch and whatever, where one thing that I will not let this country off the hook for is a complete lack of ability to be introspective, to look back at our sins and our, what, you know, things that have gone wrong and acknowledge and learn from it. And I think of that whole, I think you quoted or played a clip with, Turtle Boy about the 1619 Project, and everything comes down to, well, we don't want to learn that because that's negative and we just want to move forward. And do you know what the term pure science means? Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Do you know what the term pure science is?
Pure science?
Pure science. P-U-R-E.
I understand it colloquially, but if it's a term of art, I don't know it.
Yeah. It basically is... You know, it's, why do we study the origins of the universe? It's pure science. It doesn't have a practical reason. It's just because we want to know. And I look at some parts of history as that way. It's pure history. I just want to know what happened with slavery and all of these things. I just want to know what happened. And I don't understand people's fear with... I just want to know what happened. And then the next step to that is, because I don't want to, because that's a bad thing, and I don't want to do that again. And you said this the other night. Plus, in times when you mistreat people, whether it's family, friends, countrymen, whoever, there is an awful lot to be said with something as simple as an apology. There is really, you know, I've been doing a fair amount of reading and listening about some of the stuff that's been going on up in Canada, where they're finding these, you know, the most recent was the children. They have a term for that. I can't remember what they're called, where they would basically take the native peoples and put them into these schools and not let and basically make them, you know, form them into,
yeah, acculturate them, to destroy their Indianness.
Mm-hmm.
And beat them for speaking their language.
Beat them for speaking their language. And this particular incident came up and there is somewhat of a movement there, or it's resurrected a movement to at least find out these various schools, you know, to excavate some of these schools and find out, you know, are there graves there where they, you know, did what, you know, they where kids were killing kids, etc. And a lot of the native peoples that I've heard, they basically want, they're looking for two things: acknowledgement that it happened and an apology. Now, I frankly think, particularly with black folks in this country, it should go beyond that. But those are two awfully big starts.
Yeah, yeah. By the way, a little bit more background. Department of Children and Families, Mark, who would know these things, says Florida's Department of Children and Family Services is, to no one's surprise, privatized. We are a pro-profit country. People, not so much.
You know what? I don't even think it's pro-profit. We have... Profit is the... That's actually the secondary reason. The primary reason is we have enshrined the notion of low cost and efficiency into everything we do. Like, if you think of national health care, there are, like, you know, you hear a lot of arguments, well, we could save this much money, or we could save that much money on health care if we had a national health system. And one of these, I started thinking about this, and it suddenly occurred to me, is even if it is more expensive and we don't save money, if everyone has it, that's a good thing.
Well, yeah, and the issue of profit and loss is actually not supposed to be a proper topic of government. If it is something government needs to do, taking care of abused children, then you really don't count the cost.
Right.
But it is a function of what the Republican Party has done to America that... You know, that taxes matter more than anything. So we can let children hang fire and sit around and debate how much money we put into the program. It's the same thing with the adult population or in prisons and whatnot. If you are going to deprive, if you are going to institutionally, and by institutionally I mean governmentally, deprive someone of their liberty, you automatically assume all the duties and responsibilities of caring for that person. But we largely abdicate that under the guise of, well, you know, prison ain't supposed to be fun.
And a private company can do it cheap. So what if they can do it cheaper?
Yeah. By the way, the school issue in Canada you were talking about, they were called residential schools, and the Catholic Church ran them. Brother Deacon Asa says, if anyone needs to apologize to the Indigenous peoples of Canada, it's the bloody Catholic Church. And it was part and parcel of a worldwide practice. You know, you think about the what were the laundries? The laundries in Ireland?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. What was that story?
Dead babies thrown down a septic tank?
What was the movie?
No, it doesn't come to me offhand either, but...
Her name was Philomena, was the... you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah. But it was a worldwide culture that was, was and maybe is a racketeer-influenced corrupt organization. But you can't say that because, you know, it's religion and they'll get a sad. And there's going to be like the more recent story about that residential school in Canada. They found 215 bodies. They think they're probably going to find more because they haven't searched the entire grounds of that horrible gaping maw into hell. And again, I think as Ron and Raleigh pointed out when I was talking about the story earlier this week, Canada learned to do that from us and the so-called Indian schools at places like Carlisle, PA.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's why I say, no, that's the name of the movie, Philomena.
Okay.
Judy Dench was in it. That's who I was like, I think it was the, I couldn't remember who, you know. My overarching question / concern is, you know, I just wish everything didn't come down to more punishment. But it seems like that's our solution to everything. And you know, for anybody who says that one's upbringing has nothing to do with how one turns out, Read that fucking Gilmore book and see the complete chaos he grew up in. You know, it's the you know, the thing, a lot, why did a lot of kids from the inner cities join gangs? Because they had no other family. That was the surrogate family. And I don't know why people tend to, you know, I don't know. I just, that's where I just don't know. And I see the, I see this and the weirdness just, it's just, and again, I don't know if it's getting weirder, if it's the fact that we don't have Trump, you know, distracting us from the weirdness, but good God, it just, And I'm probably talking all over the place. I've been thinking a lot about the trans stuff that you talk about. I don't get it. I don't like this fucker, this coach, you know, Coach Cockknocker. What do you fucking care? What do you care? If a kid wants to wear a colander on his head and you know, claim fealty to the flying spaghetti monster, and the kid has talked over with his parents. I mean, I don't care. This is, you know, if you don't like something, great. Good. You can not like it over across the hall.
But he has been infected, Steve, with the disease of self-righteousness. And he has been told time and again throughout apparently all of his life that it is his duty to do God's work. And God's work, since he's probably a Protestant, is whatever he decides God's work is.
You know,
and if that includes abusing children, fine.
Fine. I mean, I remember Malloy, and of course everyone knows that Malloy is no friend of religion. But Malloy always talks about two things. Or when it comes to religion, I hear him talk about two things. He basically says, you know, when I was growing up, your religion was private. It was yours. It was a family thing. It was, you know, within your whatever.
Within your church. Yeah, and that used to be because Malloy's grandmother was Baptist.
Yeah, I was just going to say Malloy's grandmother.
And that used to be the stated position of the Baptist church. Our religion is a personal religion. It is within our families and our churches and our hearts. And you stay, government, stay out of our religion, and we'll stay out of your government.
Right.
You know, the Amish don't vote to this day.
Right. But the difference between, you know, Coach Dickweed and Malloy's grandmother, she may have worn her, quote-unquote, worn her religion on her sleeve. She may have, that may have motivated an awful lot of what she did, and Mike, I think Mike talks about this. But the difference is, that motivated her to feed people. And to make sure people had clothing. And
yes. All that Matthew 25 stuff.
Yes. Whereas, and maybe, you know, me being gay has a lot to do with it. I just, what I do over here has nothing to do with you over there. And I don't understand with these kids, they have their parents support them, you know, they have been in therapy with their parents and all of this. And who in the fuck does this guy think he is to say?
Well, I'm really trying here, Steve. There's an entire network.
No, I understand.
Of religious maniacs whose purpose is to make him feel that way.
I mean, you practice law. If he walked into your law office with you as a private practitioner, and let's say that, you know, you had expertise in this kind of thing, you would have laughed him out of your office. Correct?
I would have just, yeah, I would have been like, what do you care?
Well, no, but I mean,
go away, get out of here.
Yeah, right. You would have laughed him out of your office.
Yeah.
But instead, the Alliance Defending Freedom is a 501c3 grift, and they pay no taxes, and they exist to empower people in cases like this, and they file frivolous case after frivolous case after frivolous case, hoping that eventually they'll get a judgment. And when they get that judgment, you know, they're flinging poo and seeing and hoping something sticks to the wall.
Okay, fair
because
enough.
When it sticks, they can then use it to change the culture. Remember, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act became law in the 1990s. And it was passed and signed into law with a noble purpose, to keep majority religions and majority religious people in government from shitting on indigenous people's religious practices.
Did that come out of the peyote case?
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, the best laid plans of mice and men, gang after glee. And so the lawyers in the religion industry said, "Hey, look, we got something here. This is a wet. We can use this law that was meant to protect minority religions to empower us to force our religious views, our majoritarian evangelical religious views, on the rest of the country.
Because Christianity is so
persecuted. And so the next thing you know, their pogo stick is sticking up onto the cross." Because some bigot took the money to make a cake and then refused to make a goddamn cake. Which is a far cry from putting somebody in jail for using peyote in a 10,000-year-old religious ceremony. That's how this happens. And along the way, they have messaged so effectively, telling people who are members of a majority-dominant religious culture that they are somehow being persecuted by the minorities. Whether the minorities are people of color, or women, or part of the LGBTQIA+ rainbow, they are under attack from us, and yet, whether it is any of the people that I mentioned, we're the ones who are doing the dying, but we're attacking them.
I should also add,
it's nothing new.
No.
One of my heroes, Anne Royal, I've talked about her on the show even recently. She was attacked by a good Presbyterian minister, and thrown down the stairs of her tenement in Washington, D.C., and had her printing press completely demolished because she was writing about what a danger to the Republic the religion industry was. And that is in 1830. Or thereabouts. You know, I get so sick when I hear these religious fiends talking about how America was founded on religious freedom. Well, they never go past that. They never talk about what the people who had the religious freedom started doing the minute that they got the bit in their teeth. They don't talk about the people that they drove from their society. One of my first ancestors arrived on these shores in 1635, in the middle of a religious upheaval in Massachusetts, and the woman was eventually hounded to death. Another guy, Roger Smith, had to flee or was driven out of Massachusetts, and that's how we get Rhode Island and Providence Plantation as a state. That's why Charlene signs off, you know, Charlene in Rogues Island.
Ah.
It is baked in. It is in our DNA. And we have to. DNA is not destiny, though, and we've got to find a way out of it, and that's why I bring these things to the fore. I mean, I don't care if it's Liberty Council and Matt Staver or the Alliance Defending Freedom. These are great grifts. But they are doing us tremendous harm, and the judicial system will not do what it needs to do and sanction these people until they go out of business with these frivolous goddamn lawsuits. I mean, yes, people can be subjected to discrimination based on religion, and in legitimate cases of that, legitimate lawyers will legitimately take the case.
Let me posit something to you. I already know the answer, but I'm going to say it just for shits and giggles. Suppose this Coach Dickweed said, "The Quran tells me yada yada yada."
Well, the Fox News, TV, Radio Rwanda, and Onan and Newsmuck would be scaring the bejesus out of Emory and Marvelline. Oh, they're trying to teach Sharia law in our school.
Yep, that's. I was just thinking that's the Sharia.
Yeah, and
or can you imagine an Orthodox Jewish person going, "You should not be serving shellfish and pork and skew."
Well, yeah, I mean, the Orthodox Jew and the Orthodox Muslim could be, you know, they could hold hands and say that.
I don't think shellfish is
it is
prohibited. Okay.
Or I was told so. And by the way, I have to wrap things up because I've got a fire to start. It's time for speaking of pork, it is time for the pork butts to go on the smoker.
It's time for you to smoke your butts.
Yep, because I've already pickled my sausage. And I told Brother Deacon Asa that I taste tested that earlier, and it is fantastic.
Is it good?
Yeah, it's exquisite. And, you know, no ill effects. I'm still here, still alive. Yeah. To everybody who thought that it, my God. But anyway.
No antlers?
No antlers. Damn it.
Did he really say that?
Yes, he really said that multiple times.
God.
Now, in no way, shape, form, or fashion will getting this vaccine cause you to grow antlers. And half of West Virginia was going, God damn it.
Yes, it's half time.
I do have a note. I do have a note from Robert in Australia based on what we were talking about. Subject line, the stolen generation. Here in Australia, we had the stolen generation of Native Australian children removed by the Australian federal and state government agencies and church missions under acts of their respective parliaments from their parents and trained as domestic workers and farm workers. This happened between 1905 and 1967. After 1967, Native Australians were officially recognized as citizens of the land they'd inhabited for 30,000 years. Many young Native Australian girls were sent out to work as housekeepers for farm owners. The Australian film Rabbit Proof Fence covers the issue. One of the recommendations of the 1997 Bringing Them Home report was for Australian parliaments to offer an official apology for these policies. The Howard government, 1996 to 2007, refused to apologize because they said it would open the government up to compensation claims. One of the first acts of the Kevin Rudd Labor government in 2007 was to apologize publicly and on the record in Parliament to the stolen generation on behalf of the Australian government and the people of Australia. Quote, a 2019 study by the Australian Institute of Health and Welfare found that children living in households with members of the stolen generation are more likely to experience a range of adverse outcomes, including poor health, especially mental health, missing school, and living in poverty. There are high incidences of anxiety, depression, PTSD, and suicide, along with alcohol abuse among the stolen generations, with this resulting in unstable parenting and family situations. This is what happens when you take someone out of their culture and try to imprint a different culture on it. It is the horror of the indigenous reservation system in the United States. But that's equally a horror of a government not living up to its promises.
Huh.
And I don't know. I don't know how the healing happens. But I can listen. And I can learn. And for somebody who's still toting around a boatload of white privilege, that is important, I think.
And like I said about the 16, and the fact that people don't even want to know is baffling to me.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, I will update as we go. I mean, I'm going to be busy for the next 72 hours or so. But I'm picking up the catfish tomorrow. The menu is going to be hickory smoked pulled pork, hickory smoked brisket, and grilled catfish on homemade biscuits.
Oh my God.
And pickled Kaneka.
That really sounds delicious.
I think it's going to be.
Well, listen, you need to go.
I will. Thank you, Steve. Thanks for a great conversation. I appreciate it.
Take care of yourself, okay? Keep your head about you.
I'm gonna do my dead level best.
About all we can do.
All right. You take it easy, Steve.
Take care, man.
Later. Bye. And so we come to the end of the program. I begin to worry a little bit about the future of this program. Actually, download numbers are up a little bit. But we are struggling. We are struggling to keep the finances afloat. Oh, yeah. No, Jack. There will be a show tomorrow. Friday on the Front Porch will happen tomorrow. But I guess the fundraising goal for tomorrow is going to be $780. And that's going to be tough. If you're listening to the podcast, feel free to help out. If you can, don't hurt yourself. Thank you to all of our subscribers, Patreon and PayPal. Thank you to our a la carte contributors this evening. That's Jack and Jeremy. Thank you to each and every one of you who shares your precious finite time engaging in this conversation in whatever manner you so choose. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Remember, brand new fresh Malloy on the way at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. The best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is at HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia, working on the new show intro. I can't wait to hear it. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. This would be a great time to reach out to your member of Congress and ask them, pretty please, to co-sponsor H.R. 2073, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act. We need co-sponsors. We've got a fighting chance to save Appalachia. And it would mean the world to Appalachia, your help along those lines. Please stay safe. Get your vaccine if you haven't already. Keep taking precautions. Keep washing your hands, not touching your face, using your hand sanitizer, masking where appropriate, maintaining your social distance. And if somebody comes towards you saying, well, I guess I'll apologize for hitting that reporter because it's going to save me $400. Avoid that person like the plague, because he is. Later.